This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
Hello there. Good to be catching up with you this Monday afternoon. Shortly after, or actually before the news headlines at 12:30, you will hear from a leading wool broker who is worried about wool exports. When you look at the situation with shipping and the COVID-related factors towards shipping that's getting so much more expensive, there aren't a lot of ships around and those containers are difficult to find. What does that mean for wool exports? You will hear about that shortly on the Country Hour. Also, the challenges of getting your children home from boarding school, especially when those children are boarding in other states. Can you imagine the borders, the quarantine challenges? More about that after 12:30 here on the Country Hour today. 12:06 on the ABC right across Western Australia. Well, another couple of cold mornings in some parts of WA's agricultural region over the weekend, and there will definitely be more frost damage from the weekend events, although not as widespread as the previous ones this month, and mainly affecting pockets in low-lying areas. If you've got a story to tell on that, love to hear from you. 0448 922 604, if you can shed any light on those frosts over the weekend. At this point, the damage from the severe frost in early September is now clearly visible in affected grain crops. Ty Henning is an agronomist covering the eastern central wheat belt. He's just finished inspecting crops for his clients and says the cold mornings and dry conditions have been brutal.
What I've worked out through my travels in the last few days, I'll cover an area from Latham to Bonnie Rock to Wongan Hills and look after about 160,000 hectares in there. And from my rough numbers on damage here, I'm thinking maybe 70% of wheat and barley hectares have been affected. About 40 to 50% of the wheat tonnes are gone. 70% of the wheat will have quality issues, which is going to give us problems there at the sample hut, because we're going to have droughted grains as well as frosted grains. So if one or two grains over frosted grains when they're droughted, and the guys can lose between $3,500 and $4,500 a truckload. So we're going to have to cover off on that a bit. So on the barley side of things, I'm thinking 30% of barley tons are gone. High screenings, low weight, and then 70% of the barley hectares are affected one way or another. Canola, thinking maybe it's a bit of a sleeper, that one. It looks all right, but every pod's missing 2 to 4 seeds per pod. So I'm thinking there might be maybe a 15% yield reduction, but I haven't been able to get into the paddocks because it's so thick.
When was the last time you saw something of this severity?
Well, 2016, we had, I think it was 18 frosts, minor events. So, we had extensive damage then, but we had a kind finish. Typically, the lower yielding parts of the paddock yielded really well and brought our averages up and compensated. But we're not going to have that this year due to things drying out.
Now, there was another chilly morning over the weekend. Do you think that may have done a bit of damage as well on top of the few frosts in the last couple of weeks?
Yes, possibly. The later sown crops there, seems to be a bit of a line in the sand there about 12th of May and earlier. So wheat crops and barley have been hit. So those paddocks have maybe gone from 3.5-4 tonne down to 300 kilos maybe. The guys are talking about buying seed cleaners and whatnot, but there's so many hectares that have been completely obliterated to a degree that the seed cleaner's not going to matter. So it's not going to do the job. So we need to work out what we're going to do for grain and the marketing side of things. So that's the main reason I've been having a look around to work out what we're doing for our insurance. So there's no point paying for 3.5-4 tonne premium when it's only go 300 kilos to 0.5 tonne. And also for the grain marketing side of things, guys will be, they've been looking at pricing and trying to play the game. And if they haven't got the tonnes there, we're going to have to be a bit careful of that.
We know that there's a lot of hay cutting happening at the moment. Do you expect there will be a little bit more around in the area now?
Maybe, yes, but the export market's kaput. So, we've had lots of beautiful hay, oaten hay there that we taken to yield instead of being cut because exporters didn't want it. So guys haven't looked at dropping wheat because there's nowhere for it to go unless they've had. I've recommended to one guy to leave his oats and go and cut the wheat crop for his own sheep. You know, if we have a poor season next year, it'd be a missed opportunity if we didn't go and cut some of that wheat for the stock for next year. So it's only small hectares that I've actually cut for hay. The rest of it it's just going to take it through to yield. It's going to be slow harvesting because it'll be tough. And I suppose with those paddocks, we'll leave them to last, maybe. And because they'll be last, we'll probably have to consider options like dropping off seed destructors and things like that as well, because they take more horsepower to drive in tough conditions. And then by the time we get to those paddocks, the weeds sort of shed anyway. So you've got to think about that a bit. And also fertiliser issues for next. The fert companies are calling for orders now. What we were thinking there in terms of how much fert would need 3 weeks ago to what I'm thinking now, to two very different things. Our variable rate technology is going to be important next year because we'll have parts of paddock going 3 tonne and then big sways down to zero. So one positive about the situation is the impending Mouseageddon mouse plague has all of a sudden disappeared overnight. No one's worried about mice anymore.
No one's worried, or they're not there, Ty. They all freeze.
I don't know. They just all of a sudden disappeared. No one's worried about them.
So what advice are you giving to farmers in I suppose, the short term, Ty? What should they be out doing?
I just need to get a handle on how much damage is out there. And, I have to be prepared for what's coming. It's going to be very hard to know where we're going to end up because there's so many different types of affected grain out there. You know, you've got everything from the empty heads to frosted ones that were shrunk in and nuked early. And then they've got these other ones there that are big, sappy, watery grains that looks like a nice big filling head. You think it's all right and you squeeze the grain and there's no milky dough and no embryo come out. It's just water, fluid. So we're not going to know exactly how it's going to pan out until we put the header in there anyway.
GEWA came out with their latest production figures revised down by about 750,000 tonne last week. I mean, do you think there could be further revision down given what you're seeing?
Yeah,
what you've
I
seen?
Think so. Yeah. Yeah, all the crops are turning colour. It's become really evident. And we haven't been out there looking too hard because we sort of want it to develop a bit so you can get a clearer picture. But, it's definitely showing up a lot more the last few days in terms of crop colour change. And you can actually see where the damage is and everyone's starting to look now. So, it's all coming back pretty quick.
Disappointing on what could have been an absolute bin buster, I think many people called it. But I suppose, do you think for many it won't be a complete disaster? It will just be a bit of a disappointment?
It should go, it should still make a profit this year, hopefully. But it's not going to be much. Unfortunately, I think that's how Murphy rolls. Finally had the situation of potentially having big yield and price. And unfortunately, there's always something around the corner to level that out, unfortunately.
Agronomist Ty Henning from Tech Agri, based in the eastern central wheat belt, and talking to Tara de Landgraft. 13 past 12, and Michael Lamond, who writes GEWA's crop report, was here on the Country Hour last week on Friday, just saying that as a result of that frost earlier this month, the harvest looks like coming in just over 19 million tonnes at this point, but there's still a lot of frost assessment to go from what Ty was just saying. You're tuned to the Country Hour on the ABC right across Western Australia. Great to have you along. And there's been a really positive response to Operation Grain Harvest Assist, which uses Facebook to link retired Defence Force personnel with farmers looking for workers to help with this year's harvest. The operation was launched 3 weeks ago and is the brainchild of retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Gary Spencer, who was watching a story on the ABC's Landline about worker shortages when he thought retired ADF members would have the skills and the know-how to get the job done. Gary Spencer says former ADF staff, the farmers and the communities are really embracing the idea.
We're very encouraged by the response. To date, we've had about 1,600 responses onto the two Facebook pages.
That's a pretty exceptional amount of interest, Gary.
I think it demonstrates the dimension of the problem and the issues facing by the farmers. The grain producers don't have a great year every year. This year is an absolute bumper year from one side of the country to the other. The fact that we've closed our borders has exacerbated the harvesting issue. we're delighted to be able to come together and to work with former ADF people, retired ADF people, who are very enthusiastic by and large. I'm hopeful that we can make quite a big difference in the harvest this year.
And have things progressed beyond, I suppose, job ads? Have farmers and retired ADF people sort of matched up and formalised arrangements?
Look, I'm getting some very good stories coming from the online Facebook pages. So some very encouraging comments about this is a great idea, some very encouraging comments of this is just the sort of people we're after. Former ADF people, retired ADF people, there's a lot less risk for the grain producers by taking those people on as their team for harvest. They're great team players. In some cases, they've had exceptional training. They've often operated very complex equipment. These are really good people, and I've got a feeling that the farmers won't let them go after this year, that they'll want to hold on to them for subsequent years for the harvest or perhaps even as full-time employees.
And Gary, I suppose working on a farm and working for the Defence Force in some senses polar opposites, but in other senses probably a lot of similarities?
Angus, there are many similarities. In fact, we do all of our training exercises, our combat exercises in remote areas, farming areas more often than not. Heat, dust and flies are part of the job when you're in the ADF. You just get on and do it, and that's just in the background. The same thing applies to our farmers. Working long hours, working hard to achieve objectives, operating complex machinery, ongoing planning all the time, thinking in the background about the objectives you're trying to achieve that keep you motivated, keep you on track. This is bread and butter stuff for former ADF people.
One thing I did want to highlight, there were a couple of suggestions on the Facebook pages around volunteer work, but we're talking here about paid work, aren't we?
Everybody who's launching the program, including myself, we're all volunteers. But the guys who are out of the farm, this isn't a source of cheap labour for grain producers or contract harvesters. These people will be paid at the full commercial rate. We have a team of regional and state and regional coordinators. They're there to assist with that, to resolve any issues, to make sure our guys get looked after well. This is a big change in lifestyle for many. And I fully expect that the farmers will fully appreciate the effort that these people are going to change their life in some respects, to go out there and help them.
Just finally, Gary, lots of people involved in making all of this come to fruition, but it was essentially your baby. You had the original idea. You must be proud and pleased to see how it's all progressing.
Angus, I'll be a bit more relaxed by the time we get to the end of harvest. It's been a very, we've got a tiger by the tail here. This has been a very busy time. We're working hard to set up. We launched with a national campaign within 2 weeks. I was only sitting on the lounge watching the landline show that started it all. So once we get to the end of harvest, we can relax a bit. But we're all volunteers, but we've all been going like crazy to get the Facebook pages more sophisticated to draft. And we hope to, within a week, launch a website. I've been working closely with all of the Corps and regimental associations across the three services. We're now getting a lot of interest from retired police and firemen as well, and we welcome them into this program. They're the sort of people that we identify closely with as well, and I'm sure they do a great job on the farm. We're working very hard to try and help this become a fabulous harvest for all of our grain producers.
Isn't that great to hear? Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Gary Spencer speaking to Angus Furley. And have you managed to link up with one of these retired ADF members? I'd love to hear that story and see how it's going or what you've got in mind, the plan that lies ahead for your harvest. You can be part of that conversation on text 0448 922 604. And this just in from Doug in Meriden. Have you heard from Alana McTiernan on the wharf issue? Have you had any pressure to drop the issue? Farmers are very worried. We did hear back from the state government, Doug, just saying that it is keeping an eye on that situation. And that's the latest. This is the Country Hour. It's 19 past 12 and news headlines not far away at 12:30 today. Now, there could be some stormy waters ahead for wool exports, according to a leading broker. COVID-related factors mean that shipping is just getting so expensive, and both ships and shipping containers are just almost impossible to find. Eamon Timms is a national brokerage manager with Fox and Lilly Rural and says shipping prices today are astronomical.
Back in 2019, which is probably this situation all stems back to when shipping was probably being done for below true cost, it was maybe, you know, $1,200 US per 40-foot container was the average for world movement. As we sit last week, that Drury Index is now $10,370. So you can see it's up 10 times in value in a couple of years. So back in 2019, when returns were so low, there was just no investment in shipping. So no new ships were ordered. Fast forward to 2020 with COVID and all of a sudden a lot of stimulus packages going around, particularly the US government's stimulus, which has just driven, you know, trade to increase significantly from what it was from the COVID hole. And then this year, even more shipping's been happening. So the pressure on that pricing is extraordinary.
Eamon, you've also looked at some profit and loss figures from that Danish shipping company, Maersk, and people have probably seen that word on shipping containers around the place. What are those figures and what do they tell you about the way that the shipping industry has changed in the past couple of years?
It's been reported that in 2019, when shipping was at the real lulls, they lost $44 million. If you look at 2020, just a three-month period in 2020 after the pandemic had started, when the stimulus spending began, they made $359 million just in a three-month period compared to that previous year where they lost 44 over the whole 12 months. Fast forward to this year when trade is obviously running at really high levels on the back of this massive stimulus everywhere, particularly the US. And in that three-month period, that second 3 months of this year, the profit for that company was US$3.7 billion. So when you look at figures like that, extraordinary money, type of money that even drug cartels would be jealous of.
And Eamon, it seems that that money is being made in those Asia-Europe and Asia-USA shipping routes, and that's what the problem is for Australian exporters, that the shipping lines aren't seeing value coming into and out of Australia?
Yeah, certainly the one thing we really will have to be conscious of is the fact that there could be pressure to put ships on Asia to Europe, Asia-US, where the really big freight rates are being generated. So if there's, you know, a bit less ships calling to Australia, it might just make it a bit more difficult to get our product out.
And Eamon, as you mentioned earlier, all of this maybe hasn't necessarily translated into a hit to the wool price as yet, but just listening to all of this as a layman, it does seem pretty concerning that there's probably no end in sight, even if ships and shipping containers are being built. That, of course, takes time. So what's going to happen? Are we going to see the wool price drop back because it can't be exported? Is there going to be a domestic stockpile accumulate because it can't get on the water? How's it all sort of going to translate in practical terms?
Really, it's going to come down to the strength of demand. So if we do see some really strong demand signals coming through, people will tolerate the longer shipping times that it will take and the greater freight that it will take to get the wool overseas. So probably one of the key things is going to be, you know, the demand coming through. So hopefully we do see, as we move into this busy part of the season, that the demand kicks up as the supply kicks up. The shipping situation is probably going to be one of those things we're going to be talking about a lot over the coming season to two, because as you say, building ships is not quick. You know, it's a 2 to 3 year period to build a ship. And of late, you know, there's been record orders being received by companies that build ships to commission new ones, but it's such a long lead time.
So just finally, Eamon, do you think maybe for the next couple of years, even if there is reasonable demand, that shipping disruptions may be what is putting a ceiling on pricing?
Certainly, I think that could be a defining factor. Yes, you know, you look at the cash flow of exporters, it's going to be put under pressure because you're holding things for longer until you're getting paid by your clients, and all trading firms work on a basis of, you know, their stock turn, how many times per year can they turn their money over. So if you work in the same facilities but you're turning your stock over less often, it's going to be more challenging. So they're the sorts of challenges that we don't really want to see the exporters having, because at the end of the day, the exporter funds our growers in their business of getting their money for their wool, and the more challenging it is for them, it gets passed back down the line. So we hope that those challenges don't become too great. And as I say, you know, as long as demand kicks in, there'll be tolerance in the supply chain for it. But demand's going to be so key this year.
Eamon Timms, National Brokerage Manager with Fox and Lilly Rural, speaking to Angus Verley, 25 past 12.
I'm Bevan Eates from Manjimup, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
On ABC Radio WA.
Now, I'm sure parents of kids in boarding schools are counting down the hours until the end of this week when school holidays start. But can you imagine what it's like for families with children boarding in a different state? Tamika Cunnith's family live in the Northern Territory. They're at Waite River, which is almost 1,200 kilometres south-southeast of Darwin. Tamika is in Year 7 and goes to school in New South Wales. But due to COVID border restrictions, she wasn't able to return to school after the last holidays.
I was quite devastated that I couldn't go back and see my friends, but I was quite excited because I could stay home and didn't have to go so far. And it was quite nice to know that I could stay here with my family. But doing a lot of the assignments from here is kind of distracting, and quite a lot of the end-of-term assignments are very hard.
Have you got access to school tutors and that sort of thing out here to help you with your assignment?
Our school tutor here did help me with quite a lot of my assignments that were like due in one day earlier, so it was quite rushed assignments that weren't that good, but I'm pretty sure the teachers were very happy that I got them in at least.
And I guess, Tamika, on a extracurricular side of things, these schools offer a lot in that sense. What are you missing out on the most?
More of the physical activities that they have at school, like a lot of the sports, touch footy and rugby, and a lot of the cattle clubs, and more of like outside activities that I can play with my friends.
When do you think you'll go back?
Hopefully I get to go back next term, term 4, but maybe because of COVID, maybe next year in year 8.
What's one of the harder things about staying back here at Waite River?
Probably a lot of the cattle work, because most cattle come in during school weeks, and catching up on a lot of the school work when you miss out on a couple of days is kind of hard because they do sometimes pile it up on you. But if you get through it, just sit there for a couple of hours, you're pretty good with it. And probably being away from a lot of my friends, not being able to talk to many people, and not being able to talk to the teachers face-to-face with a lot of the problems that you face with school. That's quite hard when you got a lot of algebra to do in math, and a lot of the science experiments are too hard to do, and it's kind of hard when they don't really have the time to talk to you on face-to-face and on Zoom. So it's pretty hard.
How do you keep in touch with your friends?
When I'm away from school, a couple terms ago, me and my friends created a bit of a group chat, and almost every day we talk on it, do a bunch of dumb stuff. And it's nice to see what they're doing and what I'm doing. So it's a very nice way to keep in contact with each other across messages.
Are you the only one in your friends that are sort of being forced to stay out of school because of this?
No, I got a couple people in my class that are from Queensland, New South Wales, and me from the NT. So it's not just me who's out of school. Two of the girls from Queensland that aren't able to go back, and some of the girls from Sydney.
Tamika Cunnith speaking to Hugo Rickard-Bell from Waite River, which is almost 1,200 kilometres south-southeast of Darwin. Shortly, you are going to hear from a Western Australian mum who's in a different sort of a situation. Her kids are in Year 5 and 7, and they go to school in Queensland. And due to COVID border restrictions, she and her husband have chosen to leave them in Queensland until the end of the school year, so no school holidays for them. But it's a tough decision to make. You will hear her story just after news headlines and across to the Bureau of Meteorology. First, though, Jessica Warriner is here with an update from the newsroom. What's happening, Jessica?
Good morning. Afternoon. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian says it's not the time to say the state has put the worst behind it, despite recording a drop in COVID case numbers. 935 new local infections were detected in the 24 hours to 8 o'clock last night, and four more people have died with the virus. It's the first time case numbers have dropped below 1,000 since last month. Acting Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce has defended Christian Porter's decision to remain in Parliament as a backbencher, saying he hasn't done anything illegal and is entitled to stay. Mr. Porter has resigned from the frontbench. After it was revealed a blind trust paid for part of a defamation action he launched against the ABC. Mr. Porter has denied any wrongdoing, but Federal Labor says he needs to either pay the money back or quit politics entirely. And the WA Premier says he expects the harvest will be managed effectively, despite the lack of specialised workers from overseas. The sector had been campaigning for skilled workers to assist with the record harvest, but failed after quarantine arrangements couldn't be made. More news at 1.
Jessica, thank you so much for that update. It is 29 to 1. And just picking up on that point, Jessica was mentioning to you in the news about the Premier Mark McGowan. He held a press conference earlier today, and just at the Royal Show, and talking about that and the workers. Your response to that shortly. Also off to Mushe for the results of the cattle market. Right now, though, off to the Bureau of Meteorology. Noel Pusey is on deck this afternoon. Noel, how's it looking around the Southwest Land Division?
Oh, it's pretty good, Belinda. Yeah, we've got a high-pressure system developing and moving into the Bight for the next day or two, directing sort of easterly and then northeasterly winds over much of the state, including the Southwest Land Division there. A little bit of cloud on the south coast this afternoon, but that'll clear, and we'll have fairly clear conditions right through for the next few days. The high builds in the Bight during Tuesday and then into Wednesday, a trough developing near the west coast. Sounds like a summer pattern, and it is. And that trough will move inland under the influence of a very weak cold front out to the southwest Wednesday night into Thursday. So perhaps just one or two light showers along the south coast from Cape Lewin to Albany, and then a little bit further east along towards Esperance sort of during early Thursday morning, but only very light falls in that, and really only near coastal parts. Otherwise, gentle warm conditions and northeasterly winds over the next few days. And in the north as well, fairly fresh and blustery east to southeasterly winds for the next few days up there. There'll be fire weather warnings for much of the Pilbara and the Kimberley for the next day or two as well in those conditions, and dry right throughout, apart from the slight chance of a shower or storm this afternoon and evening through the southeast Kimberley and the adjacent northeast interior there.
And just in the Southwest Land Division, Noel, a few frosty mornings over the weekend, but nothing like that ahead for the rest of this week?
No, it's. I don't think the min temperatures will be anywhere near as low, and hopefully there wasn't too much damage from the frost. I think it was a little bit milder than we thought on Saturday morning, so hopefully just only minor damage for those crops out there in the far northeast wheat belt. I think that was probably the area that was affected.
Yeah, well, time will tell. Now, have we got any warnings this afternoon then?
Warnings, there's not that many warnings. There's coastal waters wind warnings for parts of the Pilbara coast and in the west, and fire weather warning for the coastal Pilbara and also into the interior for today.
All right, so is that us wrapped up for today? It seems a little shorter than usual, Noel.
It's shorter because there's not too much weather going on. And well, I must say, though, that those people lucky enough to be going to the grand final on the weekend, glorious day, 25 degrees, sunny, easterly winds, the lobster pot will be looking nice.
Are you going?
No chance of getting a ticket there. Oh. I was one of those people just
in the queue,
sitting on the queue. Yeah.
Oh, next time, Noel.
Next time. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Noel Pusey wrapping up the weather. It's 26 minutes to 1, and Richard Hudson is here with a look at the rainfall figures.
Yeah, in the northern and eastern forecast districts, hardly any rain at all. The only ones around was in the Kimberley, Mount Barnett and Dampier Downs, topped it with 4 mils, and then nothing else worth reading out. In the southwest land division, nothing recorded in the central west. In the lower west, Dwelling up 12, Gleneagle 16, Jarrodale 7 to 10, Carrigullen North 6, Mount Solis 7, Serpentine and Wanneroo recorded 6 and Waroona 10. And then in the southwest, Acton Park and Bailing up 7. Aldervale 21 mils over 5 days. Beetle Up, Bridgetown and Boyne up north all recorded 10. Brunswick Junction 13 to 20. That's across a couple of locations. Bunbury 7. Busselton Airport had 7 mils and at the Shire 6. Cape Naturalist 5, Capel 10, Carlotta 7, Chapman Hill 9 to 11, Collie 8 to 10, Kawarum up 12, Darden up 6 to 7, Donnybrook 5, Doyle Road and 4 Acres recorded 10, Ferguson Valley 10 to 13, Happy Valley Alert Station and Harvey 13, Hentybrook 12, Jarrowood 8, Jindong 12, Carriedale 8, Loguebrook 9, Ludlow 10, Manjum up 7 to 12, Margaret River 9, Main up South 5, Million up 10, Mount William 24, Mile up 6, Nan up 9, Newlands 23, Northcliffe 10, Paindale Alert Station 13, Perivale Orchard 6, Quinnan up 7, Ravenscliff Alert Station 10, Rosabrook 13, Scott River 7, Shannon 8, Thompsonbrook 21, Vass 5 to 11, Walpole Forestry and Warner Glen recorded 15, Wilgarrup, Windy Harbour and Yanmar 8, Willyabrup 9, Wychcliffe 10, Worsley Downs 7 and Yungarillup had 11. In the southern coastal region, Albany 8, Bremer Bay 6, Shane Beach 9, Dalyup Park 10, Denbarker 11, Denmark 6 to 8, Esperance 5, Gardiner 6, Jacup 5, Jerramungup had 9 over 4 days, Kimberley 9, King River 6, Many Peaks 5, Metler 6, Munglin up West 7, Narrowcup up West 11, Pleasant Valley 6, Tamar 10, Tallina Downs 7, Warrajarra 6 and Windrush 18 over 5 days. Then in the central wheat belt, no rain at all. In the Great Southern region, Cherry Tree 7, Franklin 5, Kojanup 8, and Quail Up recorded 6 mils, and a fair few other places had between 1 and 4, but nothing more above that. But, hey, Bill, you're about to go on leave, aren't you?
I am, yes. Thursday's my last day for 2 weeks. I know you'll miss me.
God, because of school holidays?
Exactly right.
Spending a bit of time with your kids? I'm sure lots of people are looking forward to the school holidays, none more so than the parents of boarders who have been separated from their little loved ones for all of the term. But spare a thought for Belinda Lethbridge's family, who live in Western Australia's Pilbara region. They manage Warrawagine Station, which is about 140 kilometres northeast of Marble Bar, so it's quite remote. They have 2 children at school, and this is the first time they've had them in boarding school. But unfortunately, they won't be coming home for these coming holidays. Belinda, what's going on?
The kids go to school in Toowoomba in Queensland, so unfortunately with the border restrictions, they won't be able to come home unless we want to isolate with them in Perth for 2 weeks and then obviously turn around and go back. So it's just not possible.
That must be hard for you because they're only young still, aren't they? What are they, year 5 and year 7?
Yeah, so Regina's at year 7, so she's just 12 and Jack's just turned 11 and he's in year 5.
What's that going to be like for you not seeing them these holidays?
It is pretty tough and we're really busy and they'd love to be involved. They just, couldn't wait to come home and muster and do all the things that we're doing here. But at least we are busy for Lux and I, so we can just, you just keep busy, I suppose. Yeah, it is hard and just hope that November 26th comes quickly and they get to come home.
So what are they going to do over the holidays then? Are they going to stay at the boarding school?
No, luckily we made other plans for them to go away to stay at another family member's place away from Toowoomba. So they'll go, they're actually going to North Queensland with their older brother, which, gives them a chance to see other family members that we haven't been able to see for a while, but also gets them away from town and the sort of same normal things they've been doing most weekends while they've been at school.
These border restrictions must be hard for people in your situation, trying to get your head around it and trying to make arrangements over the holidays. Has it been frustrating for you?
It has been frustrating, and I think, this time, because we sort of felt that it was going to get worse before it got better with everything that started happening, seriously in June, July it started. But Easter time was probably the harder one when all of a sudden they were coming home and then everything changed right before Easter. So we had to make a quick trip to Perth to pick them up because they're allowed to fly to Perth, but they weren't allowed to fly any further, which meant that we drove for 1,700 kilometres down there to pick them up and drive back. And luckily, we didn't sort of miss too many days away from home. And then the next holidays, everything was going pear-shaped again, and we just quickly, one afternoon, changed the flights and got them on a plane a week early, which meant they were missing a week of school. But, you know, at the age they're at, it's not too bad, and the schools are very understanding, but it's not great and it's not ideal. But hopefully, I guess we just hope the next year things are different.
I notice a national code for boarding school students was endorsed by National Cabinet towards the end of last week. That must be good news for you, isn't it?
Yep, it is good news, and I hope that WA see that the same as every other state, and that when we do come to bring them home at the end of November, that it's all okay and it's just straight in. Because, I mean, we don't want to, or one of us would have to quarantine in Perth. They may get to Perth and you'd have to stop there for 2 weeks and quarantine, but that's not ideal. And it's not what we want to do. You know, it's going to cost extra money. And where we live is isolated enough, let alone isolating in a motel room with two kids that just want to be home. And then it makes the school holiday shorter at the other end. So let's hope I'll send that all in. But you never really know till the end anyway. Like, the dying stage is really whether they're going to accept it or not, because it's, you can't apply until 3 days before, and then it comes back to you, and then it could change overnight. And, yeah, it is a worry, but let's hope it goes through.
Well, hopefully the code helps families like yours who are having to navigate all sorts of uncertainty and COVID restrictions. Is it your understanding that it's going to put in a standard set of guidelines that are similar to what's in place for essential workers who are moving across the borders?
Yes, it is. So I think we should be fine. I think we should be okay. But like I said, I think it just depends on the day and who sees your pass or who reads your, you know, you have to put so much detail in there. And then with these G2G passes, and then the next time, if you get rejected and it comes back, you don't have your answers from the first pass you put in, so you have to complete it all again. And if you have put something different from the first time, they might reject that for another reason. You just don't know. I've done several passes because every holidays I have taken the kids, well, taken them across the school and then had to come back in myself. And, yeah, each time, like, I've been rejected a couple of times and then had to fill it all out again and hope I put the right answer the second time.
Belinda, we've heard from some families who have decided to go the other way. Instead of leaving the children in the state where they're currently boarding, they've decided to bring them home, and then instead of returning them to school, they've actually kept them at home. Was that an option for you for that last term and continue the studies online?
Not really. No. We don't have wonderful internet and connections. Like, it's hard enough to get staff to do any job, so then I'd have to be looking for a governess to do that job, which is, again, hard. It's not something that I can take on myself. I mean, my husband and I are both employed on the station. We both have a pretty big role here. And the kids, I don't think they can do their schooling unsupervised, maybe when they get older. But at their age now, I'm like my son, I would be compromising every day about what schoolwork he's done and hasn't done, and then it's right time to go outside. It might only be 9 o'clock in the morning. So,
my youngest is year six, which is between your two, and there is no way in the world I'd let her do her own studies on her own. It just nothing would get done.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And I mean, it's hard that they're not coming home, but we made a plan at the beginning. So when I took them over to school, and the only reason I went there is because Qantas changed a lot of flights, and so they couldn't fly on their own, so I had to go. So that was fine. We did what we did, but then it took a while to come home. And when we knew that this thing might get worse, and this period of the COVID and the shutdowns and everything might get worse, we'll just make a plan. So that's when we did make a plan, and we made it so it's not a bad thing for the children, and we're positive about it. And they're going to have a fun time and seeing other family members that they haven't seen for a while, because we have been in WA for nearly 6 years, and the last 2 years, obviously, you couldn't get in and out easily. So I think that what we've decided to do, and then term four's only short, I think it'll be okay. And they have good family support where they are, like my parents and my sister-in-law and her family. And that's why they're there, because there's family support there.
Well, let's hope November 26 rolls around very quickly for you. And let's also hope you've got some good connections to be able to have some FaceTime or video conferencing of some sort with them.
Yeah.
Best of luck for getting through the holidays.
Yeah, thank you. We'll just keep busy, I think. And, yeah, hope the time passes quickly.
Belinda Lethbridge. She and her husband manage Warrawagine Station, about 140 kilometres northeast of Marble Barle, and Woolal Downs, about 300 kilometres south of Broome. The Isolated Children's Parents Association says that National Code for Boarding School Students is a real win for education in the bush. The code was endorsed by National Cabinet late last week, and the ICPA says that is great news because it supports consistency in cross-border movement of boarding students during periods of COVID lockdown. Quarter to one here on the Country Hour. And an all-female team from Yarri Station has taken out the 2021 Livestock Handling Cup at Sandfire Roadhouse. This event was on Friday and run by the Kimberley Pilbara Cattlemen's Association. And what it does is test station workers' cattle skills with a series of challenges. Tara Shields was on the winning side.
Oh, it was heaps of fun to compete. It was quite a surprise at the end to come out with the win. But no, we just had a great time. It's a really fun event where you just go out and have some fun doing what we do every day, but in a bit of a different environment with some different cattle.
For those who aren't familiar with the event, there's sort of obstacles set up and it's really to test your stockmanship, isn't it? Can you describe to everyone what the course looked like and what sort of things you were doing?
Basically, it's a low-stress livestock handling competition. So what we do is we have different areas of the course that we take around a mob of 12 head we start with, and from there we get to settle them in a pen, working them, droving them and just assessing the mob pretty much. And then out of that 12 head, we draft them through and bring out 6 head that we want to keep. And then from that 6, we leave the other 6 back in the settling pen, but the rest we take out onto this obstacle course, which is the fun part. Well, it's all fun, but it's especially fun to take them out there. And we had caution tape that we had to walk them underneath, a bridge made out of railway sleepers that we had to walk them over, some barrels we had to walk them around, and tarps and stuff like that. So it's all stuff that we, as stock people, aren't used to taking cattle through, but it kind of challenges us to do it all in a low-stress manner as well. So our main focus was to use the inverted T method as much as possible, especially around the obstacle course, to really guide the cattle where we'd like them to go. And then a big thing that we established quite early on with our mob was pressure and release. So when we were in the settling pen, we made sure that they knew we'll put the pressure on, but we'll release it when you are where we would like you to be. So we kind of carried that on throughout the course. And I think we can put that down to a big reason why we end up doing all right. We got a beautiful mob as well, and my team was amazing.
It's a bit of fun, it's competitive, but I guess the whole sort of premise of the event is to try and showcase industry's approach to livestock and doing it in the least stressful manner possible. It's sort of a bit of an exercise in putting animal welfare on display to the general public as well, because eyes are on the event out from outside the industry, aren't they?
They are, and it's an event that's one of a kind. It originated here in the Pilbara, actually on Yarri. Annabelle started it up, and it's a really unique concept that I'm pretty sure isn't anywhere else in the world at the moment. But the idea is it's for everyone to showcase the way that we do things for a lot of people in this industry, and the way that we'd like cattle to be handled, and it's a way of showing that to everyone, really.
Yarri Station stockwoman Tara Shields. Her team, the Ginnacali Gems, took out Friday's running of the KPCA Livestock Handling Cup. It is the 5th year of the event, and as Tara mentioned, It all was started by the owner of Yarri Station, Annabelle Coppin, and livestock handling educator Boyd Holden. The event attracted 14 teams from across WA's north. Second place went to Yarri's other team, the Coongan Country, and Roebuck Plain Station came in third. And just a special mention to the competition's first ever interstate team, Gunbalanya Station, which is managed by the Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation in West Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory. And that team placed equal fourth with Kalyida Station's team, Ace of Spades, 11-1. In some other cattle news today, and this probably won't be a surprise, but it is going to be officially announced in about 15 minutes or so, that the regulatory status of bovine Yoni's disease is set to be reduced in Western Australia after an infection was confirmed on a cattle property in southern Western Australia last week, as you heard here on the Country Hour. A deep herd investigation found the chronic wasting disease has been on the property for several years, and tracing shows cattle have been moved to almost 500 other properties in the state. Agriculture Minister Alana McTiernan says after consulting with industry, eradication is clearly no longer an option. And this decision brings Western Australia into line with other states and territories which deregulated BJD controls back in 2016. The minister says the government will support producers to transition. There'll be an information package on the disease for you and on the National Industry Program just to help producers protect their herds from this disease at an individual property level. 9 minutes to 1.
Hi, I'm Gary Cosgrove. I like listening to the Country Hour, particularly when Belinda Barischetti is doing it, and more so the 4-day weather forecast.
ABC Radio WA.
Just before News at 1 today, off to Mushay, Tracy Kilner is going to go through the yarding and the prices at today's cattle market for you. First up, though, after a COVID-related cancellation last year, the Perth Royal Show will be back with a bang on Saturday. So this morning, Premier Mark McGowan held a media conference just to let everyone know.
We're very excited by the Royal Show happening this weekend. Obviously, it's the biggest event to happen on Saturday is the Royal Show. The Royal Show, of course, will run for the week. Last year, we weren't able to hold it because of COVID-19, but this year, of course, we are, which is terrific news. We are providing support for the Royal Show with direct grants to ensure that it can occur and make sure we subsidise tickets for people across the community. So tickets will be more affordable than before, and we're also putting effort into ensuring we provide support for people who might not be able to afford to come. This year, it's also very special because we'll have a vaccination clinic here at the showgrounds. And you can roll up for WA at the Royal Show over the course of the coming week. You don't need to make an appointment. While you're here, you just go and get vaccinated. So it provides tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, the opportunity just to go and get vaccinated. And I'd urge everyone to take that opportunity. Minister? McTina?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Premier. And look, we're so pleased this event is going on because it is a great way that we bring the country and the city together each year. And we know that the city folk really appreciate and understand the work that our farmers do. And this is a great way to celebrate that achievement. We've got a bumper season this year in our agricultural regions, and we have seen spectacular turnouts, whether it's the Chapman Valley Show, the Bruce Rock Show, Mininyu Expo. We are seeing record crowds come to all of our country shows, and we just want to make sure that happens here. And I am confident this is just going to be a beautiful year for the city and country getting together and celebrate everything to do with agriculture.
The Premier was then asked about the worker shortage problem.
Okay. Well, just broadly speaking, that's a different issue to this. I'll just address this issue. The advice we have is that the Royal Show will have enough staff and volunteers to make sure it all works effectively, and it'll be one of the only shows in the entire country this year, so it's a great opportunity to come and experience all the fun. In terms of agricultural workers, we've had around 1,500 agricultural workers come into Western Australia as part of our program from Tonga and Vanuatu over the course of the last year or so. They've been working primarily in horticulture, so I've seen some reports saying 50, it's around 1,500 have come in. In relation to the broader issue from Northern Europe or those sorts of things, it's obviously very difficult because we don't control international borders and our hotels are set aside predominantly for returning Australians. We don't have capacity inside of our hotels for high-risk people. The people from Tonga and Vanuatu are from COVID-free countries, so therefore we can use a specific hotel for them because they're from some of the only countries in the world that are COVID-free and we quarantine them together. For people from other communities, it's more difficult, or other countries, it's more difficult. What inevitably I think will happen is the agricultural industry, particularly the grains industry, is very good at securing local people for this work. We have the Work and Wander Out Yonder campaign that is there that provides support. And they're very good at securing people from across the community to get the harvest in. I realise it'll be difficult, but they've been there before and I'm sure they'll do their best to manage in this difficult situation.
That's the Premier, Mark McGowan, 5-1. John Hassell farms at Pingelly and he's the president of the WA Farmers, the lobby group. John, what's your reaction to what the Premier's had to say this morning?
Oh, disappointed, Belinda. I think that, solutions could be found if they wanted to be. And, I think our ag industry is important enough for this state for them to actually want to try. And it feels to me like they haven't tried hard enough. You know, people like Gary Spencer are doing a great job. Our own Grains Council, Mick Fells and Jessica Wallace are doing huge amounts of work trying to get some solutions, but we don't seem to have the same desire out of the state government.
Well, the Premier just saying that the industry usually does find a way through and it gets the harvest done. What do you think are some of the challenges facing the grains industry this season?
I think overwork is going to be a major problem for some people, and that, of course, then puts people pretty seriously at risk when they're not getting enough rest. And you know, obviously, there's the production risk from weather events as well. Every day on the stalk, the grain is on the stalk, it's reduced yield, but also increased chance from damaging weather events.
Have you managed to sort out the workers at your place, John?
I bred them, Belinda.
Thinking ahead many years ago.
Yeah, so I'm sorted out.
All right. Well, that's great. You don't think there's any chance of something happening as far as getting in some workers, even from New Zealand between now and harvest, because that window is really closing at this point?
Oh, look, I think on-farm quarantining is a solution and there can be plenty of protections put around to make it happen if the state government had the desire to make it happen.
John, good to talk to you. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. John Hassell farms at Pingelly and is president of the WA Farmers. To the markets now, just before the news at 1, to Mushe. And the final yarding was 2,422, so numbers up 465 on last week. Tracy Kilner has been keeping an eye on things for you this afternoon. Tracy, what were the prices like?
Our prices eased with the numbers offered. The yarding was dominated by pastoral cows and bulls. Store lines received stronger competition with restockers looking to stock their abundant spring pastures. A pen of medium weight weaner local bred steers topped the market at 592 cents. The local bred weaner steers sold for 548 to 592 cents and the heifers made 400 to 542 cents a kilo. Local bred yearling steers were down 20 cents, selling from 450 to 572 cents, while the pastoral steers gained, selling from 382 to 496 cents. Locally bred yearling heifers sold for 400 to 500 cents, and pastoral heifers made 332 to 440 cents a kilo. Grown steers, including pastoral types, sold for 300 to 438 cents in a wide range of weights. Grown heifers weighing under 540 kilos sold for 300 to 412 cents, and over 540 kilo weights returned 324 cents a kilo. Prime, heavy and medium weight cows eased, selling for 278 to 360 cents. Score 2 store cows sold from 264 to 300 cents, while score 1 lightweights to restockers bucked the trend, gaining with demand to sell for 250 to a high of 320 cents a kilo. Prime Heavy Bulls eased 16 cents, selling for 304 to 364 cents. The medium weight bullies made 260 to 396 cents, depending on quality, and lightweight bulls sold from 250 to 562 cents with live export competition. This has been Tracy Kilner for Meat and Livestock Australia's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you, Tracy. And the cricket season has started. Tomorrow, there is a women's one-day international game between Australia and India, and the ABC will broadcast the game live on analog radio. That means you will only be able to listen to tomorrow's Country Hour on the ABC Listen app and the digital stream. So if you haven't already downloaded the app, make sure you do that now. So you can tune in live from midday on the digital stream of your favourite local station by downloading that ABC Listen app. Or you can just listen to the WA Country Hour podcast whenever it suits you. Just search for WA Country Hour online. So talk to you tomorrow. Hopefully. News time, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.